This call may be monitored or recorded for quality assurance or training purposes.
How many times have you heard that line, huh? How many hours or days or weeks of your life have you spent on hold listening to that shit music? How often do you find yourself forced into interfacing with some stranger to straighten out a billing discrepancy or whatever? I'm going to start recording all phone calls I have with any business enterprise for my quality assurance and screen cap all chats with customer service. Maybe I'll even take to wearing a body cam like some cop. That's probably where we're all headed in this Black Mirror gotcha digital world. Everyone will just walk around or drive around recording every fucking thing. Every fill-up, every teeth cleaning, every squirt in a urinal. All uploaded for all time and space to the cloud of limitless storage. Once we had to croak to be judged by God. Now, thanks to big data and social media, everyone can judge everyone all fucking day long with AV evidence of our transgressions.
The safari park.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Come on, Larry. Larry. Larry.
Back in episode 14, The Time Bandits, I went off on one of the greatest enemies we face. People who steal our time. If your car is swiped, insurance will cover most of a replacement. If your wallet is lifted, how much do you lose? Who carries cash anymore? But when someone wastes your time, and wasting it is stealing it, you never get that back. It's gone. In that episode, I even ran the numbers, and when you realize what vast portions of your life are stolen by waiting in line or on hold or navigating slow and faulty websites or rush hour traffic, you realize how dire the situation is. When you're dealing with a corporation or a massive public utility or the government itself, you, as the customer or consumer, are at a disadvantage from the moment your dialogue begins. Because almost invariably, they know who you are. They know where you are. They have access to an enormous amount of information about you. Personal information. But do you know who they are? Fuck no. Let's say it's an insurance company or your ISP. At best, the most you're going to get from the voice on the other end of that phone or from that chat box or email is a first name. And that name is fake. You're like the suspect in that ass-punishing metal chair being interrogated by the fuzz. Over your head is a blinding light. And all your tormentors are in shadow. Except with the fucks on the phone, it's never good cop, bad cop. They're all bad cops. And often, they can inconvenience you or damage you or fuck with you personally. And what can you do? Post a nasty Yelp review of the ginormous monopoly or the government that employs them? I'll tell you what I mean. A while back, there was a slight gas problem with a fireplace. It wasn't a leak. I mistakenly called a gas company, and just at that moment, a friend arrived who took care of the problem. It was kind of stupid and simple. I just missed it. But the gas company wonk on the phone was insistent about sending someone over just to be safe. Well, this asshole refused to back down. He insisted that someone from the gas company needed to visit. Finally, I had enough. I told him this was the last time I was going to tell him, do not send anyone here. Got it? Are we clear? Then the little fuck hung up on me. Well, that night, at 1:30 a.m., the doorbell rang, waking everyone. And there was some chooch from the gas company. I told him to tell his dispatcher to go fuck himself. Of course, I had no idea who that dispatcher was, but he was a fucking prick who knew he was untouchable. You're also at a tremendous disadvantage because of the nature of their jobs. Is their job their dream job? Well, maybe, if they're a head case. You're sitting in your home or office, or maybe in your car or on the bus, just trying to get something resolved. And your interlude with the person wearing the headset in that cubicle is, hopefully, a very brief moment in your life, something to be endured and forgotten, like a prostate exam or a tooth filling. But the person on the other end of that phone or chat box, that is their life, or at least one-third of it. They tend to come in two types, and if you're lucky, you will encounter type number one, never type two. Type one is the short or part-timers, and they just want to punch in and punch out and get paid without any major headaches or confrontations. Once in a while, they even have some sense of humor, letting you know in an oblique and subtle way that the job and the corporation or government agency suck. They can't do it with actual words, but if sufficiently articulate, they can do it with vocal inflections, grunts, sighs, and strategic silences, all of which can be denied should their fuckdog boss decide to review the recordings. Of course, this is only possible in telephone dialogues. Chat has no tone, chat is flat, chat is sterile. Woe unto he or she who draws type 2. This is the true believer, the wannabe authority figure. And they are going to practice their nascent management skills on you and bring you to heel and show you just who the fuck is boss. I recently had an encounter with Type 2. As regular listeners know, Moose, the official guard dog of the Take No Shit Dojo, whose IQ probably is several points above that of the average human, Moose is afflicted with epilepsy. As were many special people, Napoleon, Julius Caesar, Teddy Roosevelt, Prince, even Lil Wayne and Agent Smith from The Matrix. So Moose gets twice daily doses of barbiturates to control his seizures. He recently needed a refill, and I called the vet, which has been filling this prescription for, I don't know, a year and a half, almost 2 years. And someone new, Emily, took the call. And as so often happens, I could just tell that Emily was not tracking with me. You get that hint of a robotic tone that says, yes, okay. And you know damn well she's texting her boyfriend while she's talking with you. Same way as you can tell when some asshole on the freeway is texting while driving. You don't have to see their face or the phone. You can tell by the way the car is moving. Emily said she would call in the prescription immediately and I could pick it up the next day. Well, next day, I called the doggy drugstore, and they had not heard from Emily nor the vet she worked for. So I called Emily back, and this time I got Chloe. And Chloe was type 2. Type 2 is someone with something to prove, and that is that they know more than you about anything and everything, but moreover, that they can manage you. They've had a course in HR or NLP, and they can't wait to try out what they've learned. For Chloe, clearly this job was a calling, her ticket to the corner office, or corner kennel, or whatever the fuck big time is in the veterinary business. I explained that Moose needed a refill, and instead of listening, Chloe interrupted me, asking me why my dog needed this medicine. I told her, well, because her boss had prescribed it. Well, that lit Chloe's fuse. Clearly, she was of a mind that she had no boss, that she was in charge. I could kind of hear her bristle over the phone.
I need to know if he needs this medication before I can authorize this,
said Chloe. Whoa, authorize. Root word, authority. I could almost hear her hitching up her big boy pants, maybe cinching the belt on her strap-on. She was going to school me. I told her, maybe I wasn't being clear, that this was an existing prescription that had been refilled many times, that the vet had examined Moose only 3 weeks ago and had said to keep him on the same stuff, same dosage. Chloe was not having any of this. She asked if Moose had ever had seizures. She was determined to do this her way, whatever the fuck that was. Well, of course he has seizures, I told her. Why else would the vet prescribe anti-seizure medicine? Then she got really testy.
Sir, you need to answer my questions.
I said, no, I think you need to put the vet on the phone now.
There's no need to be rude.
So now I was rude. But let's back up a smidge and review what Chloe had learned in her management course at DeVry. Note, her choice of words, sir, you need to answer my questions, not answer my questions. The you need to phrase is a cheesy little Jedi mind trick to make the subordinate feel as if obeying a command is their idea. And I guess it works on smaller minds. Here, Chloe was playing Grand Inquisitor, General Patton. She's in command. And when I refused to follow the script she had in her little mind, she downshifted from Execu-Chick to Victim/Snowflake and was telling me that I was rude. I was hurting her feelings. I was a bad guy. And I thought, not at that exact moment, but upon later reflection, I thought, where have I heard this tactic before? And recently, the tactic being outrageous aggression seesawing with snowflake victimhood. And then it hit me. In the debates, which were not debates, but more like watching hookers calling out to Johns and passing cars. And the highlight of the evening that everyone brayed about was Kamala Harris torpedoing hair-plug Joe Biden's career. Harris's big moment that rocketed her standing in the polls and sent Biden's chances into the toilet came when she told hair-plug Joe that she did not think he was a racist, and then proceeded to enumerate multiple reasons why she believed he is a racist. Funny stuff. And old Joe was flummoxed, ambushed. He had no idea what to say, until he actually self-destructed, saying, "My time is up, sorry." What a moment. Since then, anyone in America with access to a microphone or a camera has parsed and analyzed the Harris attack. But not one of them heard what I heard. Well, maybe one did. If you know of it, please drop me a line at thatlarryshow@gmail.com or call me at 302-71-LARRY. I'd be interested to know. Here's the clip everyone replayed again and again and analyzed ad nauseum. But nobody identified the magic word. Can you tell what it was?
I do not believe you are a racist. And I agree with you when you commit yourself to the importance of finding common ground. Mm-hmm. But I also believe, and it's personal, and it was hurtful to hear you talk about the reputations of two United States senators.
This is the magic word.
Hurtful.
She just slit his underbelly with allegations that have since been largely proven false. And his septuagenarian guts are slowly sloughing onto the floor. But just in case, to render herself bulletproof and beyond reproach, she positioned herself as a victim with that one word.
Hurtful.
You hurt me, Joe. I'm hurt. You beast.
Listen to the theatrical waver in her voice here.
Reputations.
Not too different from...
Sir, there's no need to be rude.
Now, according to Politico, Harris and her team planned and rehearsed that attack for weeks. They had prepared for whatever response Joe might muster, from contrition to denial. They never expected Joe to fold like a broken umbrella. She also used a now famous line in her exchange with Biden.
And that little girl was me.
And miraculously, within hours after the debate, she had a t-shirt on her website with a picture of her as a small child in multiple sizes, $29.99 to $32.99. And millions of people watched that debate and thought, hey, that woman is quick, spontaneous. She can think on her feet. Can anybody print up thousands of custom t-shirts in multiple sizes and retail them in a few hours? But don't cry for old Joe. He's managed to make politics pay. They estimate his net worth in the $8 to $10 million range. And if Kamala doesn't make it to the White House, she won't be missing any meals either. Last year, she and hubby declared an income of $1.9 million. Those politicians. They're all just regular folks. They're just like us. Here's another verbal head fake that all politicians use. Long ago, they would say,
I was in favor of
insert issue, lower taxes, get tough on crime, whatever. Then it became,
I voted for
insert issue. I guess they've changed the parliamentary procedure in D.C. because nothing seems to be decided by vote anymore. Because if you listen to the parasites shill themselves, they all say,
I fought for
insert issue. I guess they ripped the seats out of Congress and put in some squared circles, and all those windbags and caviar-fed piles of flab and bullshit lace up 12-ounce gloves and slug it out like prize fighters. Fight, fight, fight. Words. Words matter. Politics is a business where there is absolutely no vetting process whatsoever. It's a popularity contest, no different from Miss America. Well, actually, it is. The Miss America chicks usually have talent. They look good in bikinis, or did when they had bikinis. They could sing, dance, play piano. Doctors and lawyers need schooling, have to pass exams, and so on. But to reach the very apex of world politics, President of the USA, the only requirements are that one be over the age of 35, a natural-born citizen, and have a pulse. That's it. Let that sink in. And as you do, think about the many paragraphs or even pages of experience and qualifications of requirements for even shitty jobs. Remember those student government assholes in high school? Nerds who could not tell a joke or throw a football or even keep a beat on the drum in the marching band. The ones that maintained a solid 2.5 GPA, picked their nose in class, and never had a date. Remember them? They now control our lives. Those same jerks who are utterly devoid of talent other than begging and cajoling and lying and brown-nosing. They are running the fucking world from Main Street to Washington, D.C. There is nothing more meaningless and worthless than the resume of a career politician. Nothing. People always use the term burger flipper as a pejorative, but in fact, burger flippers actually contribute something quite valuable to this world. When they do their job right, they're actually helping sustain life, as opposed to those leeches in the city council or in Congress. What the fuck do? They collect fat salaries, Cadillac benefits, have battalions of staffers and interns to wipe their asses for them. Take the mayor of Los Angeles, for example. LA has become a place not to live, but to flee from. This happened on his watch. He is to blame. And there was just a story about a part of town where people had been dumping garbage in a big open area for years. Piles and piles of every imaginable filth, from junk to medical waste. You could hardly see the garbage for the rats crawling over it. Rats, which are now carrying typhus and bubonic plague. And merchants and residents nearby had been calling the city relentlessly for months, begging them to clean up the mess. Nothing was done. The garbage pile continued to grow and spread, a dryland version of the Pacific Gyre. Smack dab in the middle of the nation's second largest city. Well, finally, one of those TV reporters, you know, the ones who suss out crooked car mechanics and solar panel guys and so on, he started making some noise. I'll post his video at thatlarryshow.com. But don't watch it before eating. Or maybe you should watch it before eating instead of after, because it will definitely turn your stomach. It's disgusting. Now, to show you the level of arrogance of Eric Garcetti, who is Los Angeles mayor, here's the money quote from that news story.
We asked Mayor Garcetti to speak with us about that trash pile on Saris Avenue and about the growing epidemic threat, but he declined to sit down with us. His spokesman told us we could find him at a public event, and we plan to do just that.
He won't meet with you, but you can find him at a public event, where there will be a platoon of cops and bodyguards between you and photo op Eric. And this reporter, by the way, was not working for Bob's news website or a penny saver. This guy's been a fixture at NBC News for decades. His name is Joel Grover, and he's pretty damn famous in Los Angeles. But here's the payoff to the story. Within a few hours of airing that piece, a crew of sanitation guys arrived and started the cleanup. Sources said Garcetti phoned in the order from Hawaii, where he was attending a conference on climate change. His fucking city is on the brink of a goddamn plague, and he's on a bullshit junket in Aloha Land. So there you have it, a little primer on what to look out for in your dealings with anonymous apparatchiks and sleazy politicians. Hey, wait, that was redundant. And as the whole mess unspools in the run-up to 2020, you're going to hear how they're all going to fight for the middle class. But in fact, nearly all of them left the middle class behind long ago as their book deals and speaking engagements swelled their assets well into seven figures. Over half of members of Congress are millionaires. Senators do even better. Their average net worth is $3.5 million. Not bad for public service, hmm? When Al Gore left office at the turn of the century, his net worth was about $850 grand. He's now worth over $300 million. How does an unemployed guy do that? Very impressive. Public service can pay and pay and pay. Hmm? Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. Visit thatlarryshow.com for more comment and commentary and that puke-inducing video of the incomprehensible filth of the City of Angels. And be sure to click a subscribe button. Stitcher, Android, whatever, click that Patreon button to help support the show and get access to dozens of bonus episodes, along with signed books. Yep, I've written a few of those, as well as custom recordings and more. And oh, I just posted a bonus episode, which probably should be like a companion to this show. 10 words that should piss you off. They're ones that you may not suspect politicians have manipulated and repainted to fuck with you. That's available at patreon.com/thatlarryshow. Come back and see us next Tuesday or thereabouts, and until that time, take no shit.